fact is it's there. They're going to be able to look at it. The answer is no, we aren't going to appeal it. And we're going to move forward, hopefully, focusing on the issues.
U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller won't fight release of his Fairbanks Borough employment records. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 26th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Native leaders are unhappy with the federal review of subsistence management.
We submitted to them timely, detailed everything analysis, and we have not felt that it's made it into the process.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Republican U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller's personnel records have been made public as of 4 p.m. this afternoon. Miller said this morning that he would not appeal a judge's ruling regarding the release of his confidential personnel files from the Fairbanks North Star Bureau. Miller spoke with Steve Heimel on APRN's Talk of Alaska.
I just basically want a yes or no, I guess, or whether you've decided to appeal.
Well, I mean, I think that there does need to be a little background. No, I'm not going to appeal.
Miller said it is unfortunate that somebody's medical or other information can be released simply because he's running for office. The Republican candidate for U.S. Senate said he had remained mum on the content of the records due to a confidentiality agreement with the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
There is a confidentiality agreement that I'm bound to by the borough that limits me in what I can say. That being said, I think Alaskans are entitled to know whatever they want to know. So the whole file is going to go out that has been released by the judge. It's, again, something that doesn't allow me to really respond much to what's there except to tell the Alaskans that, look, not been a perfect person with respect to the issue with the computers voting in that political poll. But, you know, the fact is it's there. They're going to be able to look at it. The answer is no, we aren't going to appeal it. We're going to move forward, hopefully, focusing on the issues.
Several media organizations sued the Fairbanks North Star Borough under the Freedom of Information Act to gain access to Miller's personnel file. Miller had worked part-time for the borough and was disciplined by his employer for having used borough computers for political purposes, violating the borough's ethics policy. Miller has fought the release of the records since midsummer, but recently admitted that he had been put on a 3-day leave and docked pay for his gaffe. The personnel records are now online on the Anchorage Daily News website. One memo from borough attorney Renee Broker, dated March 26, 2008, notifies Miller of an investigation and possible disciplinary action for being, quote, dishonest about your conduct and about the reasons for your conduct, unquote. Broker refers to Miller's use of borough computers. Broker then tells Miller she realizes he is under stress, which could be the reason for his lapse in judgment. Other records contain internal borough emails regarding Broker's worry about email correspondence regarding TAPS litigation. Others mention Miller's health. Reached by phone a few minutes ago, Broker said she felt sad about the release of the records. Joe worked here for 7 years, Broker said. We were friends. It's sad. Federal scientists say the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska contains less than one-tenth of the volume of oil than was previously estimated. The U.S. Geological Survey says new data puts the new estimate at 896 million barrels of oil, compared to the agency's 2002 mean estimate of 10.6 billion barrels. The USGS has also cut its estimates of natural gas in the sprawling reserve from a mean of 61 trillion cubic feet to 53 trillion cubic feet. The agency's 2002 estimates ranged from 5.9 billion to 13.2 billion barrels of oil and 39 to 83 trillion cubic feet for natural gas. The USGS says its new numbers are based on factors including seismic surveys and drilling of more than 30 exploration wells. Candidates for U.S. Senate and House exchanged views yesterday in Fairbanks at a Chamber of Commerce-sponsored forum. Longtime Republican Congressman Don Young said his long record of bringing money to Alaska speaks for itself.
I have been working very closely with the Senate side and with the minority side for the last 38 years. You look at the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline, the 200-mile limit, all those originated in the House. The gas line bill itself that passed way back in the 90s and the most recent one. We can go for the Coast Guard, how we've got now 9 Coast Guard stations in the state, and it was 2 when I became a congressman. We can look here in Fairbanks, your transportation system in Fairbanks. That is not all state money. That's a lot of federal money.
Young's Democratic challenger Harry Crawford responded by portraying the 77-year-old Young, who recently weathered a corruption investigation, as a politician who's had his day and is past his prime.
Congressman Young's had his problems over the last few years. He's no longer in the leadership and really is at the end of a very, very long career. I think it's time to start building, like I said, new seniority and somebody that has relationships on both sides of the aisle. You have my record in the legislature, 10 years of cooperating and collaborating with both sides of the aisle to get things done for Alaska.
In one exchange, Crawford challenged Young on the congressman's support of a bill that would have eliminated the income, death, and gift taxes in favor of a national sales tax.
H.R. 25, the value-added tax, 23% tax, actually raises taxes on 80% of Americans and lowers it on the top 20%. And I believe that is... That's a pattern that most of your legislation has followed over a number of years to disadvantage everyday Americans.
If you don't have money to reinvest, if you keep taxing capital gains and your income, you won't have any money to share with anyone. That is the problem we're all faced with. This country is short of capital. Our industrial base is collapsed. It will collapse more as we borrow money from China.
On the Senate side, Democrats Scott McAdams and Republicans Joe Miller and Lisa Murkowski offered views on the economy, federal regulation, and resource development. Murkowski said she's built up valuable seniority on several fronts over the last 8 years.
I have been serving on the Energy Committee, and as an energy-producing state, an energy resource state, I can't think of a more important place for your elected representative to be. I am that ranking member. I will continue on in that capacity. I also serve on the Appropriations Committee. So to be on the Authorizing Committee, whether it's Energy, Indian Affairs, or the Health, Education, Labor, Pensions, and then be on the Appropriating Committee so we can gain leverage.
Murkowski said Alaska will have the least seniority in the country if either of her rivals win. Joe Miller accused Murkowski of being part of overspending that's landed the country in financial dire straits, an era, he said, is coming to an end.
You know that the House leadership is coming that is going to probably be the majority this next November, this next January, is very much committed against the earmark process because, again, they understand that this country is going bankrupt. So you can either be responsible, and you can say, look, we are nearing bankruptcy as a country. These dollars are going to shrink. We've got to do something to reform the system. Or you can sit back and say the ways of the past are going to continue the future and try to buy Alaskan votes in that manner.
Scott McAdams agreed with Miller that the national debt and unfunded liabilities like Social Security need to be addressed, but added that regular Americans shouldn't suffer to fix the situation.
You know, there used to be a time in this country when corporations paid for 40% of the cost of doing government. Now that's down to 7% in America. Now, I don't believe that you balance a national budget on the backs of a young state, on the backs of Alaska Native villages, on the backs of seniors, and on the backs of kids, while you continue to provide tax loopholes for multinational corporations that outsource and offshore jobs and tax cuts for the richest 1% of American millionaires.
McAdams said he favors eliminating tax breaks for those who make more than $500,000 a year. The former Sitka mayor and school board president portrayed himself as an everyman Alaskan, while Miller said he's been misrepresented by the media and reaffirmed his support of states' rights and opposition to government bailouts and national health care reform. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a website for Alaska Natives.
Our languages and our cultures are so important that we need to start the social networking effort.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sean Parnell and Ethan Berkowitz want to be your next governor. Do you know who you'll vote for? Hear what the candidates have to say on Debate for the State 2010. On Thursday, October 28th at 8 p.m., Alaska Public Broadcasting brings you a live debate with candidates for Alaska governor. You can submit questions now. Email to questions@debateforthestate.org. Then watch or listen to your local public television or radio station, October 28th at 8 p.m.
The North Slope Rural School District is projecting a rise in student enrollment for the first time since 1999. District officials count 69 more students than they counted the same time last year. That's a 4% rise across the board. Jake Neer from member station KBRW has the story.
All but three villages on the North Slope are seeing increased student enrollment in the 2010-2011 school year. North Slope Borough School District officials count a total of 1,607 students during this year's official count period, as opposed to 1,538 last year. That's the first increase in enrollment the district has posted in 11 years. The total increase amounts to 69 students, give or take a few, when the state releases its official count in the upcoming weeks, says NSBSD Superintendent Peggy Cowan.
We usually lose a few students when you get the final count from the state, which will be at the end of November or beginning of December. But at this point, we are certainly confident that we will be up students, which is the first time since 1999 that the enrollment has actually increased. We've had a downward trend district-wide since 1999.
It's unclear at this point what is driving enrollment improvements on the North Slope. The NSBSD has no current data relating to demographics or economics of new students, and Cowan did not speculate on any cause for the increase.
We're not demographers, and we are not economists, and we're not, you know, so we don't have an expert opinion. I think strong communities make strong schools, and I think that folks are living here and staying here is positive both for the school's enrollment, but also for the communities.
In addition to the school's increasing role as the cores of North Slope communities, Cowan says the district's recent focus on dropout prevention and attendance initiatives may also be helping. But along with increased enrollment, districts must often adapt with long-term structural planning. Cowan says this year's 4% increase alone will not force any immediate changes to the district's overall system or design.
4% is a healthy number, and the trend is in an increase rather than in a decline, and we are meeting our projected enrollment. We projected being stable for the first time since 1999 as opposed to a decline, and so all of those notes are positive, but it's not like a big spike that's a stress on the system.
Cowan says only one school site located in Point Lay is currently crowded. She indicated some rearranging is likely necessary there. On the opposite end, schools in Onaktuvik Pass, Akasuk, and Wainwright all counted lower enrollment than this time last year, but only in the single digits. Schools in Barrow added 40 students, and the villages added 29 across the board. Superintendent Cowan seems pleased by the improved enrollment, but says the most important focus is to keep already enrolled students in their seats every day.
The numbers are important as we look at distribution of staffing, in a long term and do long term planning and look at next year's budget and all those things. But the most important thing now is to make sure that all the students who are currently enrolled attend regularly and take advantage of the opportunity that school provides.
North Slope Borough School District officials now await the official state enrollment count, expected near the end of November, early December. In Barrow, I'm Jake Neer.
Social Security, that venerable institution, turned 75 years old this year. It provides retirement income for more than 70,000 Alaskans, but is not simply a lifeline for older Americans. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer tells us, Social Security supports an increasing number of children.
In most states, around 8% of all Social Security recipients are children. But in Alaska, that number is higher. It's more like 12%, and the number of children affected by Social Security jumps even higher in the remotest corners of the state. AARP Alaska has broken down the numbers by region. For instance, of the 3,555 Social Security checks received each month in Juneau, 390 of them go to children. children. AARP Alaska Communications Director Ann Seacrest says Social Security is a family protection plan.
It's much more than a retiree program. Social Security plays a pivotal role in the lives of children here in Alaska. In most states, 8% of all Social Security recipients are children. But what we found in Alaska, the most current statistics, is almost 12% of Social Security recipients are children. So that was a surprising statistic.
Alaska is second in the nation in the amount of children receiving Social Security. Mississippi is first. On average, 37% of all recipients throughout the state are not retirees. This includes children, surviving spouses, and disabled workers under the age of 65.
For instance, a worker who started to collect either Social Security retirement or disability benefits, their dependents then are eligible to receive additional money. Second could be they could be the children of a widow or widower, or they could be the children of a disabled worker or adult who became disabled. So there's a variety of categories under which children are eligible to receive Social Security benefits.
Seacrest says in the past about one-third of Social Security benefits coming to Alaska went to children or disabled, but recent data indicates that number is on the rise. According to an analysis done by AARP, the more remote the area, the higher the percentage of Social Security dollars aimed at children, greater than 50% in Northwest Alaska and some parts of the state's Southwest. In the Wade Hampton census area, 220 children got Social Security checks compared with the 265 checks that went to retired workers. What if those checks stopped coming?
It would be devastating for any area, for any of these groups, not to receive that guaranteed payment.
Seacrest says statewide data is helping AARP to get a grasp of the impact of Social Security on families. 71,000 Alaskans received Social Security as of this year. Seacrest says the program is financially strong in the short term and can be strengthened in the future with certain adjustments, like increasing the cap on the system's payroll tax. She says with so many people relying on Social Security, that adjustments need to be made now so that future generations can count on the plan being there for them. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Sea Level Seafoods and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation have reached a settlement over wastewater permit violations. The Wrangell-based company will pay more than $92,000 in fines for discharging wastewater and waste into marine waters without a state or federal permit. Sea Level Seafoods discovered it was operating without a valid permit during an internal audit 2 years ago. Sea Level immediately notified the DEC and the EPA of the violation and has applied for a new permit. Sea Level voluntarily agreed to the settlement. Sea Level General Manager Vern Phillips was unavailable for comment.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
When Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar last year announced a sweeping overhaul of Alaska's subsistence management, he said the current dual state and federal management system was broken. Salazar then promised to bring it in line with the mandate of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, granting preference to rural Alaskans. The problem lies in an unresolved conflict between the state constitution and the federal mandate. ANILCA promised a rural preference for the taking of fish and game for the federal lands in Alaska, but Alaska's constitution guarantees that fish and wildlife be reserved for the common use of all Alaskans. The recent federal review was less sweeping than Alaska Natives hoped for, and it was wholeheartedly rejected by Alaska Federation of Natives delegates last week. AFN President Julie Kitka.
During the course of the secretary review, we spent hundreds of hours in many meetings all across the state putting together people's best ideas. And we submitted to them timely, detailed everything analysis, and we have not felt that it's made it into the process. And we've had two in-person meetings with the Secretary of Interior pleading with him to accept these recommendations. And so far we don't see our ideas coming into their review and coming out.
Proposed changes by the Interior Department include the addition of two Alaska Native subsistence users to the Federal Subsistence Board and giving more clout to the regional advisory councils. The Secretary's authority didn't go so far as to redefine a priority for either Native only or rural resident plus urban Native. The review also did not expand public lands defined under ANILCA to allow federal subsistence management on Native-owned lands, which are private and currently managed by the state of Alaska. Julie Kitka said that the AFN leadership is hopeful that the newly appointed federal chair, Tim Tworek, will make a difference in educating federal bureaucrats and that talks will continue.
Our preferred outcome is that the secretary will re-engage with the Native leadership and call together, together with the White House, an interdepartmental working group on the hunting and fishing rights issue and the other departments to include Department of Commerce, Department of Agriculture, Department of Justice, and Department of Interior, and work with us to strengthen his review so that it actually meets the needs of the people.
AFN delegates passed a resolution last Saturday that called for Congress to convene full oversight hearings on the drafting of new federal legislation to protect all Alaska Natives and other rural Alaskans in continuing their pursuit of food and nourishment for their families. There's a new Facebook-like website for Alaska Natives. AlaskanVillages.org was created by Iditarod Musher and Native Rights and Sobriety activist Mike Williams. Williams of Akyak says Native people need a new tool to stay in touch.
Because many of our people in our villages are moving into Anchorage and Wasilla and to other urban areas from our villages. And there has been a lot of disconnect in the conversation, the connection between the village, their relatives, and living so far away.
The website features individual pages for each village where messages can be posted. William says it mixes elements of Facebook and Craigslist and is open to anyone. William says Alaska Natives living in urban areas often feel isolated from their culture and that the immediate communication allowed by the internet can play a role in sustaining and reviving it.
Our languages and our cultures are so important that we need to start the social networking effort to reconnect those individuals from that are living in urban Alaska and in rural areas.
Williams, a mental health counselor, says a rash of suicides in southwest Alaska villages in recent months has heightened the need to connect. He's organized local healing circles and has mixed feelings about technology's effects on Native people, but says it can be a positive tool. Yesterday, in his two-part series on street youth gangs, KSKA's Len Anderson focused on the structure and membership of Anchorage gangs. Today, he turns to law enforcement and the courts.
For two full days this week, nearly 100 police officers filled the large lecture room at the Anchorage Police Training Center to learn about street gangs. Dr. Al Valdez is a nationally recognized author, trainer, and consultant on youth violence. He says it's not belonging to a gang, but why and what you do that determines your street gang status.
law specifically says that you're a gang member, okay, that's all right. In itself doesn't qualify you for that statute. What you have to do with those gang-related crimes, and the prosecution has to prove that it's for the benefit of the gang, then you qualify for that statute.
Once we identify the group, we have to look for the criminal element, and the criminal activity is what identifies the criminal street gang.
Scott Lofthouse is the gang criminal intelligence officer for the Anchorage Police Department. Lofthouse has developed an Anchorage list of more than 4,500 names of potential street gang members and just under 180 known groups in Anchorage. To that listing, Lofthouse applies the state statute.
Three or more individuals who in the preceding 3 years have committed two or more felony offenses, but there's a couple of other little qualifiers. It has to be at the direction of, for the benefit of, or in association with the group.
Using that standard, Lofthouse has 78 validated Anchorage groups, of which 30 are currently active. And he's validated about 375 criminal street gang members. That doesn't mean there aren't more, but that's the number APD has confirmed. And Lofthouse says the designation gang member is not lightly bestowed because it can influence certain cases. Such crimes, most often drug dealing, but also others of a more violent nature, are classified as gang-motivated. Crimes committed by a known gang member, but not for the benefit of the group itself, the law describes as gang-related. Those are criminal acts committed by gang members, but are not done to benefit the gang. 90% of Anchorage's gang crimes fall into the related category. But with either designation, the individual must have been validated according to the statute. So the official tally is likely lower than actual gang-motivated or related crimes. The ultimate goal is to get Lofthouse's information into the court, but that's proven difficult.
We've had a couple of cases where we've indicted as a gang-motivated crime, and we've had the courts actually dismiss those indictments because the defense raised the objection that that information is prejudicial to the defense. But there are some crimes where there's just no other motivation, and that's truly what it is. It's a gang-motivated crime. So how do you charge that when you don't have a motive other than gang, and you can't use that in the trial?
Gang expert Valdez is not surprised at the Alaska rulings.
The bench always makes the ultimate decision, or the jury, and Mr. Lofthouse does what every good gang cop does in the country. He takes his three swings at the plate, and he does the best job he can, and if the court or the jury finds that it's not true, then we try to make it true.
But there are occasional successes. Lofthouse says he was allowed to testify during sentencing at a Nome trial of two gang drug dealers arrested in Kotzebue. They each received an additional 2 years to their sentences. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jake Neer in Barrow, Tony Gorman in Wrangell, and Deanna Hecker in Talkeetna. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Tired of campaign ads? Then tune in to The Real Candidates on Debate for the State 2010. On Wednesday, October 27th at 8 p.m., Alaska Public Broadcasting brings you a live debate with candidates for the U.S. House. The U.S. Senate debate begins at 9. You can submit questions now. Email to questions@debateforthestate.org. Then watch or listen to your local public television or radio station, October 27th, beginning at 8 p.m.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.